What's up, guys? Phil here. Listen, I'm taking the night off. Yeah, I know. I did it a few weeks ago, but you know what? It's getting warmer. Some stuff I want to do, and I don't feel like being home tonight. So, mega powers on myself taking the night off. This is part two of a four-hour open mic night I had about a month and a half ago. Hope you guys enjoy it. Myself, Mr. X, Tank, Sugar Shane. We had a nice time. Talked about everything from WrestleMania 2 to nicknames to music to whatever the hell was on our mind. So we hope you enjoy it. And we'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Don't forget, of course, take care of yourselves, each other. Don't get arrested. Avoid the clap. Be nice to animals. And enjoy the show. Later.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
But
Dave Megapowers.
So rare.
Yeah, like Dave Megapowers. Like, that's fucking genius. When he was... Yeah. Calling into the Shining Wizards. I'm like, that guy's name is awesome. When I, before
as soon
I met,
as I hear that announcer, Dave Megapowers.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's a nice play on your name.
Who did that, by the way, if you know
I won a I won a contest, and the contest was – I won some kind of I was on some kind of podcast site, and I won a raffle, and the guy said, I'll record your spot. Tell me what you wanted. I was like, okay, here you go. I typed it out. He sent it to me within 2 days, and he gave me the music and everything. So,
no shit.
Yeah. If you go back and listen to the older episodes before Dave, I did like 10 or 20 of them before Dave came on the show. I had my buddy, my buddy made me a Sabbath-ish one with a bunch of shit in there.
Oh, that's badass.
Yeah,
be in the dog pounds.
Yeah, my dog. Yeah, my friends called me Phil Dog when I was growing up. So.
So you're a big Ozzy fan then?
Yeah.
Ozzy kicks ass, man. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah,
yo, Ozzy,
even
Ozzy,
that show kicked ass
idol.
Too.
What was that?
Ozzy's your idol.
Yeah, he was one of my idols anyway.
Yeah.
What mania was Ozzy at?
Two.
Okay, that was Russ. That was
the Bulldogs.
Was he in Chicago?
Yeah.
Was he in L.A.?
No, he was shit. That was the
did he hit the mausoleum?
Yeah, it was the Nassau, Chicago, and then the Los Angeles Coliseum, WrestleMania 2. That was my favorite WrestleMania.
Really? Where was Ozzy at? Was he the ring announcer?
No, he was in the corner of the Bulldogs.
Oh, okay.
That was probably, I think it was Nassau Coliseum.
Well, that's fitting.
Yeah, they're from the same area, so.
That's badass.
Yeah, Manchester. So.
Best match on the card, Bulldogs and Hart Foundation. One of the best. That was Bulldogs and Valentine and Beefcake.
Bulldogs and the Dream Team. Yeah, Valentine Beefcake.
Okay, yeah, that was a good match.
Yeah, I saw the build up to that, man. That was one of the best build ups ever. You see, that's the thing. I can't. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So. But. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, it's this whole thing evolved around me just shit talking. It wasn't I didn't take it too seriously until I actually was told I should do it. You know, I was talking to Kevin Castle, and he was like, you know, you should do your own podcast. I'm like, nah, I'm not as cool as you and your fucking friends. With your fucking hotline. He's like, no,
he's
no,
a
no.
good guy, man. I like
Kevin. Was my club promoter, man. I had a shitty band in the 90s. He promoted my shows. He booked me on a lot of cool shows, and I was...
Calling your band a shitty band?
Yeah, it was shitty. It was pretty shitty.
You know he booked Mastodon?
Of course he did.
I was like, holy shit.
Dude, I got a great story. Did I ever tell you guys the Hatebreed story?
Nuh-uh.
Tank knows the Hatebreed story.
Was Josta drunk or something?
No, not at all. Back in 96, we had a major blizzard, maybe 97?
96.
Okay. They shut the city down. Like, we were crippled. It was like Midwest style, you know? We'd never got that much snow in a gazillion years. And I had this band, and Kevin booked me to open up for Hatebreed. Hatebreed was just getting big. They just started playing clubs and stuff, and they're from Connecticut, so that's about a 3-hour drive to where I live from where they live. So now think about it: if it's a 3-hour drive and they live north of me, they got double what we got in snow.
So it's, well, shit, man.
Right. So now it took me 2 hours to get to my fucking, to the venue, and I fucking lived 15 minutes from there by car because of the fucking weather. So we were like, you want to cancel? I'm like, and all the bands that were on the bill didn't cancel.
See, that's.
Now, mind you, we played in front of 12 people, but none of the bands canceled. So they drove in, and we were the opening band, and they just drove in early so they could just not, you know, try to get in there and whatever. It took them all day to get there, and they left some of their equipment behind. So the bass player used our bass head because they headlined, and we struck up a friendship. You know, this is before the internet, so we didn't have, you know, this is before, you know, fucking YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and everything else. So when you saw him, it was like a handshake and a hi, how are you? Fast forward, maybe 2003 or 4, there was one Ozfest I did not go to. My best friend and his wife went, his wife-to-be. And I just kept bragging to my friend Will on how I met them and that we were friends and we were, you know, like we were acquaintances. And he just didn't, not that he didn't believe me, but he's like, you know, he didn't think I knew him that well. So yeah. Now, an Ozfest, I don't know if you guys have been to one of those festival shows, they have, like, the meet and greet where you buy the CD, and you get paid to have them all sign it, apparently, in, like, those tents.
Oh, that's dope.
So, Will did this. He bought the new Hatebreed, and he walks up to Jamie and them. He's like, listen, my buddy has a band, and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, oh, and the guitar player was like, I know Big Phil. That was a great night. And they say, and he was, like, floored that they fucking remembered, you know? So... Yeah, the scene was great. And when Kevin talked me into doing a podcast, I was like, you know, I'm not as cool as you. He's like, no, you don't have to be, you know. And he's very fucking – no, he's not tech savvy at all, as you could tell. And
but he gets by, though.
He gets by because Don Tony spends a gazillion dollars on his equipment. And
yeah.
And Kevin phones in like it's 1998. And that's the beauty of it.
Kevin, he calls him like he's calling from prison.
Right, and it's great because
if he's not talking about El Perez, it's not a good night.
Yeah, and you know what? It's and I had a the and how it started was when I was in a band and Tommy Tank remembers this because Tank used to come over my house for Raw and Nitro. We would watch Raw and then tape Nitro because I couldn't do both. Right, so. Well, Tank would come over, and we hang out, because I still lived at home at the time. And he'd come over, we hang out, and Kevin would call my room. I had my own phone in my room where I live with my parents, and my own phone line. And Kevin would call me to book. I was the guy who booked all my shows for the band. So Kevin was like, yo, listen, can you play on this date? Yeah. What are you doing? Oh, I'm watching Raw. What are you doing? And that's it. And we talk about fucking wrestling for 2 hours after you booked the, you know. And then... Even cooler, we wound up going to SummerSlam together in 97. When did Austin fight Owen Hart? Was that 97 or 98? When he fucked up Austin's neck? You guys remember that at the Meadowlands?
97. That would have been 97, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So you saw that?
With Kevin.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Yeah, and Mike from SOS, a band called SOS. And his brother John, a doorman. John still works for Kevin. Fucking 20 years later, he's still the doorman at the club. At the club they work at now, not the club. The club that we all met at is a fucking Mexican restaurant now. But yeah, no joke, it is. So
great guacamole.
Right, exactly. So you know the backstory there is you know we were all fucking wrestling fans, you know, and a lot of the hardcore kids.
A lot of them, yeah.
Or fucking wrestling and hip-hop fans, too. So, like, when I used to go to a show, you know, we weren't even talking about the music. We talked about what's going on with hip-hop and fucking hog and wrestling. You know, it was like, that's a, you know, like, old hip-hop, not fucking the crap that they, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Well, when I went to go visit my family in Chicago, because I got family there, too, there was, like, I don't know, you've heard of, like, the whole Sharp movement and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like the, you know, skinheads against racial prejudice or whatever.
Yeah, they used to wear the fucking red laces in their boots and shit like that.
Yeah, those guys, man, I don't know if they were drunk or hammered. I don't know what it was, but they started, like, stunning each other in this fucking alley. I was, like, We had on, what was it? I can't even remember. Oh, it was WrestleMania 17. And then all of a sudden, like, you see, like, five of these dudes coming out of nowhere, and they start fucking wrestling each other. It was fucking nuts.
That's crazy. Listen, I got to step away for 2 seconds. Talk amongst yourselves, all right? I'm going to mute the mic. Give me 2 seconds. Go ahead, guys. Mm-hmm. Talk amongst yourselves.
Mm-hmm. So how's it going?
Jesus Christ.
Who's one of the race there, race man?
What?
He's talking to me.
Yeah.
I turned it off to come on to the show.
Okay.
Even though, guys, this is being taped on a Saturday. Tonight was the Duck Commander 500 in Texas Motor Speedway. It was won by Jimmy Johnson in the Lowe's Pro Services car.
Oh, this was tape. This was a tape event.
No, this call, this show is tape.
Oh, okay.
So when it airs, nobody's gonna know.
Okay.
Nobody's gonna understand what we're talking.
Oh, okay.
So who's your favorite driver then?
Who, me? Jeff Gordon.
Oh yeah. What about you, Brian?
I'm not the biggest racer. I like Earnhardt Sr. I respect it. I have my best friend. They race. They race at a local track. They won track championships. I more go out there if I go out there for the party atmosphere. It's just hard for me to watch racing. It's just I'm ADD somewhat, and I can't. I don't have the patience for it.
Oh yeah, my favorite driver is probably Clint Bowyer. That's just me. I actually met him before. So,
Tank, on the wrestling, when did you start watching wrestling? What brought you into wrestling?
What brought me into wrestling? Well, again, my father was doing all those church events, and my father had the worst time treating the Samoans.
All right.
Those two big nasty bastards.
All right, I'm back. I got a visit there. I had a fucking go to the bathroom because I've been sitting here for 2.5 hours.
So yeah, those two nasty bastards, they would cut themselves, and of course the New York Life Athletic Commission, even today at that time, was like, oh, they gotta be bandaged up. My father says, you go bandage them the fuck up. Because they're not gonna let nobody near them. And my father's
gonna fucking keep
big dude. And they would only let my father bandage them because they were afraid of my father.
No shit.
No joke. And
wow.
If he would send somebody your size, Shane, the Samoans would tell him to get the fuck out of here. So it always wound up happening to my father would have to bandage. Because anybody bigger than them, they were afraid of.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wait, how big was your dad then?
He's a big fucking dude.
My dad is 6'5".
Holy
and
shit.
At the time, he could have been 4.5.
Yeah,
to,
he was
to easy. 5.5.
He was 4. He was at least 4 when I first met him.
Holy fuck.
But at the time when he was riding, he was about 5.5.
You know what's even gross? Tommy's dad's a retired plumber for the city, right? Tommy's dad's hands are massive. You know, they call me fucking sausage fingers on the Shining Wizards. His father's hands are massive. So and they're all messed up from, you know, fixing pipes and stuff. So when he grabs you, he would like he'd give you the fucking nerve hold, or he'd give you a fucking he'd give you the claw. And I'm like, dude, like, oh, he would like grab you from behind and rub your shoulders. Like, what's going on? I'm like, dude, you're massive. Get your man hands fucking off me.
Get the monkey fucking wrenches off of my shoulders.
Dude, he's got like fucking mallets for hands.
Holy fuck.
Yeah,
man.
Dude. Yeah.
And that's
crazy.
Long story short, with all this stuff that I have personally going on right now, that old bitch broke his knee. In November. He only just had it operated on in the last week of March.
Yeah, because he duct taped it for 6 months. That's all. It's...
But still. But...
That's what he does.
Anyway,
he duct tapes it.
He...
So your first TV experience, Tank, when's your first, like, what's the first TV experience where you were just sitting there like, holy shit, I got to watch this?
1977, watching Bruno and Backlund at different points in their career, watching George Steele. And, you know, George Steele before the, mine.
Okay.
You know, and back when Captain Lou was actually wrestling, back when you know, Monsoon was just winding down, back when Vince was just an announcer, back when Hogan just came in, you know, I could have went to the Shea Stadium events for free. Shea Stadium was a New York City Parks facility. So my father had access to any building in the city. All he had to do was show his ID.
Yeah.
We just didn't go.
The good old days.
So that's how long I'm hooked.
All right.
I'm hooked.
I've always wondered.
Because I was hooked because my thing was the live action Spider-Man. And right after that would be the wrestling. With Backlund and the early 83 Hogans and the early 80 Hogans.
Okay.
That's dope.
So
Shane, how old are you again, Shane?
I mean, I'm 21, but man, dude, I've watched.
No, I know you have good knowledge. So what?
Yeah.
So was you even attitude? Was you an attitude guy?
Oh yeah. Well, my first experience watching, I mean, what really got me hooked, you know, was, you know. You know, of course, prior to that, you know, of, you know, videotape I saw, but it really got me hooked, believe it or not, was Shotgun Saturday Night.
Wow.
Ahmed Johnson is fucking sloppiness.
Yes.
Yes.
When I first watched Shotgun Saturday Night, and believe it or not, it was the very same episode when Undertaker tombstoned Triple H on the fucking elevator or escalator.
In the Port Authority bus terminal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow.
So I was just like, wow, this is amazing, you know. So, and then of course, you know, along the way, you know, I've had, you know, at least one falling out with wrestling, you know, it's probably 2005 to 2008 period, but I just, you know,
that was mid-90s with me probably. I had falling out in the mid-90s.
I never had. I'm so pissed because you talk to guys like you guys, and I was talking to Shining with Zeddy not so long ago, and they all did the same thing, him and Matt. I mean, a lot of guys just walked away from it. I just never stopped. No matter where
he
I was in my life.
Never walked away.
Right, no matter where I was in life. I remember, like, fucking Tommy and I.
Well, I always knew what was going on somewhat. Like, but I didn't watch the weekly, the loyal, setting the VCR and all that, not until... When I remember being in a hotel room in Dayton and Nitro was on and Scott Hall came out and it was like, what the hell is going on in wrestling?
Yeah.
Like,
you know,
I
it was
see what's going on now.
Tommy and
so
I,
I'm glad that I saw that cause I got to see the whole NWO start and all that. That was kind of, you know,
Tank and I were, yeah. Tank and I were involved in volunteer EMS for a long time. And I remember my regular shift was a Thursday night at one point when I first got really into it. And
when you came in, I worked you to Thursday night.
Right. You were put me into Thursday night shifts. And when SmackDown started up, I can remember we had a little like a 10-inch TV at the dispatch desk. And we watched SmackDown every week religiously for like 2 or 3 years. And that was when it first started, you know. And that's when we knew it started to change. Because at that point, WCW was rolling, you know. But you had an idea of what was. I mean, we always had an idea where it was going. You know, I didn't think it was gonna be this digitally enhanced and shit like that. I just thought, you know. But again, we don't know anything. When you're in your fucking 20s, you don't. You just you know at this point you're still trying to get yourself together, learn who you are, and But I never got away from it. Like, I never had that falling out, no matter how bad it got. Like, right now, people are like, how do you still watch that shit? What are you, retarded? Are you half retarded? Somebody said to me the other day, are you half retarded? I'm like, no. I'm just not inclined to watch anything that's fucking on TV that doesn't involve cooking or wrestling or pornography. I can't be bothered with anything else.
And I also don't know if I had a falling out like, I hate this. It was more like I was at an age where it was like the clubs. I'm fucking smashing different hoes every night. I didn't have time for it.
Yeah, you know what, dude? You know what I mean? I did the same thing. And all I did was acquire video. Like, Tommy would tell you, I used to bounce in a fucking, yeah. I was a bouncer in a drag queen club at one point, right? I would, no joke, Tank remembers this, I would record the fucking, a week's worth of shit, which was ECW, Raw, SmackDown, and then my boy, Brian, would tape a fucking week's worth of Jerry Springer before he went fake too, when they were brawling for real. So every week we'd get together for like 4 or 5 hours, and we'd sit in his house, and we'd watch all these tapes. Or Tommy would come over to my house, we'd watch my tapes, and then the pay per views, I would just record them. I wouldn't watch all of them every month like I used to, except for the big four, like the Manias and the Rumbles and the. But no matter where I was, I didn't turn down pussy. Don't get me wrong, or I didn't, you know. I was working like an animal, too. I had to work like 2 jobs, and I was doing volunteer work and shit like that. But I would find myself going to like the newsstands, like coming back from these awful clubs, like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, taking the subway. I'd stop at a newsstand, like a 24-hour newsstand, or I would go to like the bus stations that Ahmed Johnson would slap, you know, drop people on because he couldn't wrestle. I would go to those spots and buy all the fucking rag magazines. I would buy the Bill Apta books and shit like that, because I would get every spring, like right around now, I would go out and get the almanac, the PWI almanac that looks like a Reader's Digest, you know. I didn't get it this year because I haven't found it yet, but I'm sure I'll see it next time I go shopping. But I never got away from it. You know, I never stopped.
Now, I would have never walked in that room to, like, turn this off. It wasn't like I hated it. You know what I mean? I would, if it was on or something like that and I happened, I would catch it here and there. So, and I would look at a magazine at the grocery store or something like that. But it's just, I just didn't have the same passion to set the recorder. It just didn't, it was a real dead period also.
Yeah.
People complain about now, it was nothing like it was then.
Yeah, you couldn't sell the garden out anymore. Like, I remember going to a, I didn't go to a house show for years, you know, because it just didn't appeal to me like it did, you know. I didn't go to a lot, from 1999 to, I want to say, when was Mania 20, 2000 and...
Yeah, give or take.
2003 or something like that, whatever it was.
2003-ish.
That was the only live event I went to in like 5 or 6 years at that point. And then after I came back home, I moved back home after I broke up with my ex, I went to Ring of Honor for the first time in like 2005. And I was way hooked again. Because all these little shows are popping up. Like all these Northeast independents were like all over the place. Mm-hmm. And some of the shit was like, oh... Like, some of the wrestling was unwatchable. You know, these guys are just, like, they would let the students fight. Uh-huh. And it was just like, it was like a bad circus, you know, where they, you know, the clowns come out and they stumble all over each other. These poor kids were greener than protein shakes, man. They were terrible looking, you know. But it is what it is. And
Yeah, pea soup looked better.
Yeah. And you know what? I think... The business itself just, again, like I mentioned before, it just wasn't socially, it wasn't pop culture accepted anymore. It wasn't the thing. Back in the day, it was the thing. You know?
Yeah, like in 95, if you'd have told me in 98, 99, I would have had literally, like I said, every Monday night, my place was the place to be. I had the big screen, the RVD gimmick. I mean, it was standing room only in my apartment. And these are, you know, a lot of friends I grew up with that would have never watched. They never watched the previous stuff. They always thought that, oh, they never like put me down, but you watch the wrestling and stuff like that. Insane Guys was in my living room week after week, addicted to the stuff when the Attitude Era hit. And it was just like, if you'd have told me that in 95, I would have, no way, that it would have came back around to where it was cool to watch wrestling, where you would go to a Walmart, you'd go to a park, and 7 to 8 out of 10 people would be wearing a fucking 316 shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, it was insane. It was just insane how quick it just got, it got red hot again like never before.
Yeah.
It was just insane.
And just think, in 1996, we could have lost WWE forever.
They were tanking, man. They were in the shitter. They were bleeding money. They had opened up in Midtown in Manhattan, Times Square. They had the restaurant that closed, and they just didn't
sell. I have a shirt. I have a brand new shirt from there. It's still in the bag in my storage area. I saw that the other day.
Yeah.
WWF World Wrestling Federation, Times Square. Yeah. I'll send you a picture of it. A brand new, just a black shirt, T-shirt with the WWF logo on it.
Yeah.
I saw that the other day when I was looking for that Georgia shit.
We were, I was talking to a friend of mine, a friend of my wife's, who's a graphic designer. He's, you know, he's getting into the business, trying to design shirts and shit. And I was telling him, I'm like, you know, I said, I make parody shirts with the fans of my show. I said, because I'm probably clever enough to come up with ideas and shit, but I just like to go back to the old shit. I like the feel of the, I like those old logos, and I like, you know, because it brings you back to a better time. And, you know, I wish, you know what, this is what you should do, Shane. When you next time you're at a convention or you're at a fucking yard sale or something,
yeah,
and you see some of these old wrestling magazines,
yeah,
pick a few of them up and just look at the kayfabe articles. You will get lost in these guys shit talking to each other or how. I'm serious, dude. Like when I was a kid, I believed that.
That's why I love kayfabe news,
dude.
The magazines are way better.
Dude, when I was a kid, I was convinced that people really hated each other.
Oh, yeah.
We were convinced that, like, especially with when – that's why I like the Rusev gimmick so much. Because when I was a kid,
yep,
it was either the Sheik of – oh, it was Nikita Koloff. And,
exactly.
And telling you how he hates
Ivan. Him. Ivan Koloff.
Yeah.
He was the scariest son of a bitch in the world.
And the only one that was really Russian was Ivan Koloff. I think Ivan Koloff. Nikita was from Minnesota, you know.
Ivan's Canadian. He's from Canada.
Yeah. But I think he does. I think he is.
He lives in North Carolina, but he's from Canada.
But I think he's Eastern European, though, because when I saw him.
Okay.
When I saw him at WrestleCon 2 years ago, he had a bit of an accent, but not like a French Canadian accent. I think he's.
Nikolai, he came from Philly.
Yeah.
I watched that 95 Hall of Fame recently. And,
yeah.
His interview, he talked about that.
But that's why I like that shit worked when I was a kid, man. When I was a kid, people hated Russia. You know, people used to walk around with Russia sucks T-shirts, you know? Like legit, I was, like, beside myself. But that gimmick, those gimmicks worked. I was convinced that Larry Zbysko really hated Bruno Sammartino for what he did.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I was convinced that fucking... that what's his face? What the hell was it? When Orndorff turned on Hogan, I love Orndorff. When Orndorff turned on Hogan, he gave like a whole article, kayfabe article, on how Hogan disrespected him at a restaurant, and it was just like And Apter was like, when I met Bill Apter 2 years ago at the same show I met Ivan Koloff, I made him sign. I had a PWI on my bag. It was a top 500. John Cena's on the cover. I had him sign it for me. He goes, I haven't wrote for them in years. Why are you asking me to sign this for you? I'm like, because you are the reason why I'm sitting here right now. I'm like, you guys made me believe everything I love about pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so when that now look at this book that I have, even though you didn't write for this magazine for some time now, it's still a part of me at fucking 40 years old, you know? Like, I still find myself going, they're $10 a fucking piece now. But
I still buy them.
Yeah.
Whenever I see one, I still buy it.
Yeah. And what you're buying is now is a...
I don't buy them now.
No.
Back in the day, I had to have the big three every month. Inside
Wrestling, Inside Wrestling, The Wrestler, and PWI.
The Wrestling Illustrated. Here and there, you'd grab maybe an All-Star Wrestling.
Wrestling Eye. I think there's one of them called Wrestling Eye. There was another one called... But the main three were The Wrestler, Inside Wrestling, and PWI, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
you know.
And then they would come out with the gimmick, the dream match issues with Sting versus Hogan or Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson versus Hogan. I showed you guys that. I still have that. I still have that issue.
I've got two of them. I have two of them, and I read it one night sitting down there, and just the whole build up. They were great. I mean, the writing was awesome on that. How they met and the falling out. Great stories.
And then you know how they would have like the rankings from each Fed in the back of the magazine, and then they would also do is they would give you results from house shows.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's how I knew Ronnie Garvin beat Ric Flair for the title from reading that fucking book, because we didn't have Mid-South or NWA.
It was Worldwide Wrestling. They showed that on.
Yeah,
Worldwide Wrestling.
I didn't have that. We never had that on a, you know.
The belt changed hand on a Saturday at noon on Worldwide Wrestling.
Yep.
On WUAB Cleveland.
Yep.
43 yep. Cleveland. Wow. Yeah.
But you see what I'm saying, Shane? It's so.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It was so much fun, man.
And Shane, you would know tonight the results from WrestleMania if you didn't watch it. You could just get on the internet. If you didn't order the pay-per-view or you had to wait for the following week or the next TV tapings, because they would already have the shows taped, and they would come out with a pretty generic show, but they would go to the weekly report, and you would get your WrestleMania results in the weekly report. Like the Mean Gene, I forget what it was called, or Lord Alfred Hayes would do it.
Yeah, and then
they would record that, but the whole damn show was a recorded pre-show.
Right, and then the local paper here in New York in the late 80s had a guy called the Slammer, right? He wore a potato he wore a potato sack over his face like a mask to keep the kayfabe. He was
in Mr. X mode.
He was
Jason Voorhees.
Right, Tank. You don't remember? You remember the Slammer, right?
Yeah, he's that guy. He's that guy on Ring Wars, the armchair grappler.
Same concept. What he would do is every weekend he would write a little article in the Daily News about what's going on in wrestling, and then he would write like, hey, this is where the fucking kayfabe started to break down. Hey, if you want to know who was backstage in Hartford, Connecticut tonight, call my 900 number. And he had a 900 number. I never called it, but you know, people would be like, "Oh yeah, so and so was there." And you're like, "No, he wasn't." You know, just bullshit.
I think
one time that he said that Ric Flair in 1988. Was backstage at the Royal Rumble, and the reason why he was there was because they were going to unify the NWA title the WWF title.
He just wanted you to call the hotline. That's all.
But he just wanted you to spend $75.
Yeah, it was like fucking $3 a minute, and kids didn't know any better. They would fucking run up their
first. First time I ever saw it in the paper, I remember, and I had these. My mom threw a lot of shit out, and I'm still mad to this day, but I had the original, the USA Today from WrestleMania 4 and WrestleMania 5. It was like front page. Like it was the day after, the Monday, and it was like extravaganza. I mean, this was USA Today. They were reporting on WrestleMania. I'm not for sure about WrestleMania 3. I'm sure that got reported on too, but I just remember WrestleMania 4 and 5, I don't know if that had something to do with Trump or whatever, but USA Today was reporting on this, and I thought that was a major, like, breakthrough on wrestling. There wasn't no kayfabe or anything like that. I don't think I would have ever been cool with that at that point.
4 and 5
I
were
hate
the
kayfabe.
Trump meanies.
Yeah, 4 and 5. The USA Today reported on this. Like, front page, like, extravaganza, Trump Plaza. I had those in, like, mint condition. But they're gone now, along with a lot of magazines. I don't even know how I have a few magazines. I had stacks of shit. My mom just threw it all away. And she didn't know any better. I mean, she just thought it was old shit. My Hulk Hogan finger that I got at the first Survivor Series and the program, she threw that away.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, just it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know? And that's another thing when people talk about, you know, Austin, the greatest selling shirt and all this. If they would have had internet sales back in the mid-80s or 84 to... say 90, Hulk Hogan's shirt would have been the all-time by far biggest selling, because if you didn't get to the event early when Hogan was on the card, the shirt would sell out. You weren't getting the shirt or the finger.
What my biggest regret was not ordering the Four Horsemen had sweatshirts and satin jackets.
Yep.
And they're like $80 for the jacket.
It was a silver satin jacket with the four white horses in the back.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And then it had a red one too.
My grandfather has the red one.
That Tully Blanchard always wore. So I wanted the red one, and I never fucking ordered it. And then, like, they would have, like, the videotapes, right? And this is before we even thought about copying stuff. Nobody thought about copying it. But, like, the tapes were, like, $60 a piece.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
You know, and that's how I saw the first two WrestleManias. My godmother worked for the city. She was a court stenographer. And one of her friends had cable out all the way out east in the suburbs of Long Island. And they would, you know, video. They had those satellite feeds, like the closed caption. Closed circuit. And they would record them. And that's how I saw the first two Manias, was off of videotape. But if you wanted those tapes.
The Coliseum videos, they were like $80 a piece or something. They were insane.
But
Jesus.
And then the video stores would carry two or three at a time. And that's, you know, my first.
Story on that, how I have all the Coliseum videos, because it was probably around the best of the WF Volume 9 or 10 series is when I was, like, started realizing the dual VCRs and the recording and all that. So, like you said, they would only have one or two tapes. So what I did, all day long, I would call video stores within, like, a 30, 40-mile range. I would just call video stores, like, do you have any WWF tapes? And I'm 13, 14 at this time. And I would have a piece of paper, and I would check it, and then I would tell my brother, like, hey, we got to drive 40 miles to this video store and take out a membership. They have the British Bulldogs and Bloopers, Bleeps, and Body Slams. And we did this for, like, a whole summer. I mean, so we would drive all the way there and get these tapes, go back to the house, and then you'd have to record them VCR to VCR, and then drive all the way back.
And you had to rewind them, or you got to fucking, they would charge
you. You had to rewind them, and they came out three at a time in a series. There was a best of, a wrestler, and then a bloopers bleeps, or, you know, managers, or whatever. And I have every single one of those still on video up until about volume 13 or 14.
Now,
driving around, you talk about a lot of time driving around, because what we might call a store and they'd be like, you know, we have the Andre the Giant. We would drive that 2 fucking hours just to get, you know, back and forth, just to rent that tape and then take it all the way back. It was insane. When you
another thing, I just realized this, you know, versus now, you know, of course we're in a digital age, you know, it's the whole, you know, it's our medium now. You know, but at the same time, how fucking lucky were you if, say, you know, of course there was tape trading back then. How lucky were you if you were to get a really, really nice master copy of a tape or something?
I still have my best of the Intercontinental Championship, the Coliseum video. I still have that. I have the original. Mega Powers.
Wow.
Mega Powers.
He got the Bulldogs.
He brought it to my house the first couple of weeks we were doing a show together. And I fucking converted him to DVD. So I have him on DVD now. So, like, you know, and some of the stuff that you've never seen before. Because you have to understand, too, Shane.
Lot of that shit is taken for granted. Like, if you had a really good copy, that was.
Yeah.
You know.
And another thing is, I told you, I said it 100 times how I used to go to shows every month for 4 years, right? They would do the same card or the same matches in other parts of the country. Not like they would do Boston Gardens, Maple Leaf Gardens. They would do, you know, just regional shit. Hartford Civic Center, Meadowlands Arena. And the stuff that you didn't see at the Garden, here in Madison Square Garden, they would have, like, in other places. And you're like, wow, this is great. You know, and then you would watch. And it wouldn't have the same outcome, same match. Just not the same outcome. You know, so that was fun too. That was pretty fun.
And you know,
so when
just
you talk about quality, Shane, you don't know about VCRs, but you had an option to set the, what was it, EP, SP,
SL.
Yeah,
no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
See, now, I'm not for sure how good the quality
was.
I'm not for sure how good the quality was if you had chose 2 hours because I couldn't afford to buy all these tapes. So I would always squeeze the 3 shows or 4 shows if you could on the 1 tape. So my qualities probably aren't as good as to put them on the DVD.
I don't care. I put them on. I don't care. If you could still play them, they're on DVD. I convert them.
I mean, when I was a kid, like, I mean, you know, growing up and stuff, it was like my two favorite shows, they weren't cartoons at all. It was Nash and Walker, Texas Ranger. And I'd record
Jesus.
Those damn things.
Shotgun
like
Saturday nothing. Night, MASH, and Texas Walker Ranger. Go
yeah.
on.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So I was into all of that, man. So
I can only say it so many times. I feel like I have a real good connection to and you guys can tell I'm passionate about it. The old stuff, and I hate to sound like my, you know, when I was a kid and I talked about wrestling, all the old timers would be like, "Ah, oh, he ain't Bruno Sammartino, or huh, he's not, you know, he's not Vern Gagne," and you're like, "Oh," but you know, when kids talk about stuff now. Like, oh, that guy's the greatest. I'm like, yeah, but he's no Ric yeah. Flair. He's no Barry Windham. He's no Arn Anderson. Yeah. He's no, you know, Macho Man. He's no Rick Rude.
He's no Dusty Rhodes.
He's no Dusty Rhodes. He's my hero, you know? And he's my hero because he could sell anything. That
yes.
guy could be the fucking, he could sell fucking.
He could sell ketchup popsicle to a woman in white gloves.
Dude, yeah, he could sell fucking ice to Eskimos. You know what I'm saying? Like he's he's that dude. And you, everything he said, you believed a lot. When these
you
guys
believed, you believed. You sat on the edge of your chair, like, what the? Wow, Dusty's about to talk.
When Hogan
shit about his match.
Yeah,
I want to hear him talk.
When Hogan told you he was eating his vitamins and saying his prayers, you believed it. When Gary Hart came out and said the Great Kabuki's gonna cut you up, he's gonna cut you up.
When
you know,
Kevin
when Hulk
Sullivan,
Hogan went
know?
And got Mean Gene to train to fight Fuji in Morocco.
Oh.
I honestly thought Mean Gene trained to fight Fuji in Morocco
yeah.
in Minnesota.
there's a clip of, and I think I played it on a show one time. There's a clip of Dusty Rhodes when he was feuding with Kabuki, right? And Apocalypse Now was the movie that was popular at the time.
Does he have face paint on?
He does.
Oh
yeah, Kabuki.
I know what you're talking about.
Right? And
you a soldier, you a warrior.
Yeah, right. You know what? I think I should play that. But, you know, it's funny because you watch that and you're like, you believe that he was going to war. You know? He had the face paint and the whole 9 yards. Hold on a second. Let's play that. He's got the fucking headband on.
Kabuki. Are you an assassin? Are you a soldier? Are you an errand boy? I think you're an errand boy, my man. Gary Hart declared war on the American dream. Dusty Rhodes. Gary Hart is the assassin.
The assassin.
Tell him, Dusty.
I will come for you both. Kabuki. War. No titles. No prestige. The end of Gary Hart. The end of Kabuki. For I am the assassin this time.
Crazy shit.
I would love to get that on a shirt.
That was good shit.
Because you believed it. When Sergeant Slaughter fucking when Sarge cut his early promos, as a heel, not when he defected and became an Iraqi, but when he was a heel Marine, it was like you believed it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So now
you're talking when he was NWA Tag Team Champion of Kimola, right?
Right. Right. Okay. And yep. And then like so now you know how I feel now when Dusty, now being 15 years old, Dusty now comes and wears polka dots, and he's a plumber, and he's a pizza man, he's a you know, he does all, he's the common man. Was it funny? Yes. Was it great to watch, see him in WWF? Absolutely. But that wasn't the Dusty Rhodes I remember. Fighting the fucking Four Horsemen, fighting in War Games, and, you know, winning titles and going after Kabuki with face paint on. Him
and Kevin. Sold those polka dots well.
He did, because he's Dusty Rhodes. Gosh. He's Dusty Rhodes.
Sweet Sapphire, baby.
The Sweet Sapphire, if you will. That's my baby. That's my... Come give me some sugar, baby.
And who would have known that Sapphire's kid and his kid would have got married?
Yeah, right.
Back when Kabuki would literally blow that green smoke in people's faces on Georgia or whatever it was, I honestly thought he was blinding people.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, people with mood and all that, Kabuki was my guy. Kabuki was my guy. Not as in like I liked him. He was the guy that would come out on Georgia with Gary Hart, and Gary Hart would sell that son of a bitch to no end.
He wasn't even that good.
No, hell no, he wasn't. But the whole look, the gimmick, and the freaking shit that he blew
mystique,
out of his mouth.
His mythology.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You really believed it when Michael Hayes, because Michael Hayes, my first experience with Michael Hayes, I thought he was gay as a kid because he was the manager of the Freebirds, and they were the national tag team champions on Georgia.
Yep.
And Michael Hayes would carry around this little white can of cream, and he blinded the junkyard dog with it. And I really thought he fucking blinded the junkyard dog, and he was never going to see again.
And the dog,
Gordy, 2 weeks later, piled drive DiBiase about 10 times on the concrete floor, and 3 weeks in a row they're at the hospital with Ted DiBiase in the hospital. I thought his fucking neck was broke.
See, the first time ever, like, seen Michael Hayes. He wasn't with the Freebirds. It was Wrestle War '92 of WCW.
Oh.
So,
you know what? It's funny because Brian mentioned, you know, the Freebirds and injuries. Guys didn't break kayfabe. If they hurt their neck, they would walk around the airport with fucking neck braces on. You know, if they hurt themselves, they would be like, when Dusty kayfabed the ankle, you didn't see him for 3 months. He came back and told you about hard times, though. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's why when Cowboy Bob Orton's wearing the fake catch, you're like, hell, all my freaking, you know, all your idols, they were really hurting. You're freaking acting like you're hurting. You're really not. Well, hell, they were all acting like Cowboy Bob Orton.
When Snooker got smashed with a coconut, you were like, you thought that was legit. Like, you know,
when he pounds on that door saying, "Damn, mama, come on, got me," whatever the hell with Piper, you're like, oh my God, he's going to kill Rod.
And
Piper
those coconuts weren't prefabricated. He took
them.
Right.
Yeah.
That's another thing, too. Like, Snooker knew he was getting the coconut, but he's getting smashed in the fucking head with a. It ain't like, you know, it ain't like when ECW had. Say what you want about ECW, but when they went through tables, they weren't pre-cut like they were in WCW. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, guys, you know, back then they sold it. They sold it well. I'm not saying guys don't sell it well now, but it doesn't compare to what happened back in the day.
Yeah, the first time I ever seen the table, I think Rachel's and Terry Funk. I was the Clash of Champions
New York Knockout.
Jesus, yes,
we just talked about that on the last show.
Oh, hey,
pile drive Flair after the match. You're like, Jesus Christ, man. That's fucking extreme.
And that was a real legit table. That wasn't a fucking, you know, pre-cut.
Oh, that was the freaking table at school that you ate lunch at. With the metal.
They borrowed that, from the local school over there, man.
Yeah.
New York.
You act sucking, dog.
Yeah, that's right. That's the thing, man. It all comes down to...
See, Phil, how you are with Dusty... I'm that way with Terry Funk and Roddy Piper.
Yeah, well, see, that did because they're all world class performers, man. See, Piper, when I saw Piper, dude, and I think you heard me mention this before, but I saw Piper in a 3 or 4 year stretch where he never lost a match. He never got pinned. He would lose matches by DQ, count out, never got pinned.
Now, you remember when he came in and he was managing Dr. G and all that? You know,
that's
why
when I first started watching wrestling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's when I first started watching wrestling. I have, again, watch those pipes.
But do you know why he wasn't wrestling then, Phil? Do you know why he was the manager?
No.
His eardrum was still recovering from the Greg Valentine Starcade match.
That's in his book.
And oh, I didn't read the book, but that was 83, right? When he fought for the U.S. title in the dog collar match.
Yeah, that's the one where Hogan was supposed to be on that card with I think Wahoo or something, but Vince paid him just to sit at home and.
Right.
That's when Vince was basically realigning the whole deal, but. Piper, he had a busted eardrum. He couldn't wrestle for months. So
that's crazy.
Vince knew he was such a good talker that he said, "I got to get you in here." So he had Dr. D, he had Orndorff, and
Orndorff was the fucking man, dude.
One other person too, because Piper to me, I mean, I remember him. My first experience with Piper was he was George or Gordon Soley's sidekick as an announcer.
Yeah. He never really opened. Did he was one of those announcers that he just came out during the middle of the show and sat down and started calling matches with Gordon Soley. Because before, listen, Joey Styles made a career of calling matches by himself. He was amazing at it. But there was the originator of that was Gordon Soley.
No, he would stand there at the podium with Gordon Soley at the main podium, and he would do the show with him for weeks in and out. And then the first time I seen Piper actually get involved was when Morocco showed up in a mask and attacked Gordon. And then that's when Piper, like, saved Gordon. I forget who missed. I think it was Mr. X. That's the name that Morocco used. When he showed up on Georgia Championship Wrestling, and that was my first experience seeing Piper. I thought he was just an announcer with Gordon Soley. He was out there every week. He was the heel. He played the Jesse the Body part.
Yeah.
But then once Gordon got attacked by Morocco, that's when Piper kind of went. But I didn't realize Piper was actually wrestling on house shows and all that. You know,
his stuff at the Olympic Auditorium in Los Angeles. It's some of the most heelish shit I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Is that on YouTube?
Yes. It's on YouTube, okay. And it's on Daily Motion.
You want to talk about the Dudleys, when like the Dudleys used to incite riots in ECW, right, Tank?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Right? They would, but nobody, no. I mean, the Dudleys were great at it, but Piper was amazing.
La Cucaracha.
Yeah.
So you attended the ECW shows, Phil? You were actually there?
Dude, I was at, from 95 to 98, I was in Philly at least once every 3 months. I didn't miss any of the New York shows except for one because I had fucking walking pneumonia. Ironically now, I live a half a mile from where that actual venue was, which is the Sports Fest thingy down here in Staten Island. I lived in Queens at the time. Tommy and I, Tank and I, were at... you guys heard that episode from the throwbacks a couple months ago called It Ain't Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. We were at that 98 card at the Elks Lodge. Those ECW matches were special because the fans made it special. It was a cult following. It was almost like when it almost has that Florida Championship Wrestling. You know how Kevin Sullivan talks about how Florida Championship Wrestling, they had those couple of spots in Florida where the fans were just, it was the same fans, it was the same vibe. That's how it was back in the late 90s with ECW.
It was a revolution, man.
Yeah.
And not for nothing, for weeks on end, you were on TV.
Yeah, because what happens was when you went to a card, one card was four episodes of ECW on TV.
Oh, that's awesome. So you saw yourself on TV?
Dude, every fucking week.
No shit.
Yeah, for a month straight. Me and Tommy weren't in on ours because I got balcony seats for us. So we sat in the balcony and it was fucking magic, you know.
But the ECW on TNN, you see Phil.
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah. It was funny shit, man.
The dude with the Expo hat, it's Phil.
Yeah, there was a time where I had a buddy who was going to wrestling school, and he was working. Johnny Rods was training him in Brooklyn, and Johnny Rods trained Dudley, Dreamer, Taz.
Taz, yeah.
Right? So Taz started a wrestling school in Long Island in the suburbs, and he had Perry Saturn as a trainer, and I think Mikey Whipwreck and a bunch of other guys. So my friend wanted to expand his training. So how it worked was you paid, you had to pay Taz for an interview. You had to pay him like $50 for the application because, you know, Taz only had like three graduating students out of that class. Was Chris Chetty.
Yeah, I was about to say his cousin.
Danny Doring and fucking Roadkill. Nobody else graduated. My friend Dave actually went to the interview, and I wanted to go just to meet. I didn't want to go to wrestling school. My friend did. So we sat, and we, you know, Taz said to me, he goes, if you want to get interviewed, you have to pay. I'm like, no, I'm just here to see you. And he's like, oh, that's cool, whatever. So, you know, they ran that promotion grassroots, and all the shit you watch on the videotapes and the DVDs and all the documentaries and shit, that's all legit, man. Everything you hear about that stuff is legit. Some of the wrestlers are bitter because of the money stuff, and that's rightfully so. They got fucking dicked over because of money. But other than that, dude, it was all the real deal, all of it. And when you went to these matches, they were cool as shit. I must have said this to you guys a bunch of times, how I met Mick Foley.
Mm-mm.
I was waiting to get in one night. He was fighting Terry Funk, ironically, and it started to rain. And now you guys know it was a bingo hall, right? So there was general admission seats, and you know, first come, first serve. So for a 7 o'clock show, people are lining up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now it's a 2.5 hour drive to Philly from where I live. So we fucking drove, you know, in the morning, got there in the afternoon, hung out, and started to rain. Fucking
was Mick... this winter time?
Or... No,
you said rain. Okay,
so... it was summertime. Mick Foley took a fucking milk crate. No, legit. And I wish my friend Brian would call him, but he would never call in to fucking because he's a punk. But he came out in a milk crate, sat on a milk crate, and just sat down on the line bullshitted with us for like 2 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. The month later we went back out there, and it was Benoit. Taz had broken his neck, and the gimmick was he needed help because Benoit, Malenko, and Too Cold Scorpio were like a heel stable with Benoit and Malenko were the triple threat with the franchise, Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
And Too Cold Scorpio was like a free agent. They were fucking around. They broke Taz's neck. Taz broke his neck for real and came back and brought the Steiner brothers with him to fight Benoit and Malenko.
Oh, shit.
Right. It's all on video. You can see all this shit. I can't make this stuff up. But I was at the night I went to see one of those matches they had, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko were leaving to go to their car because outside of Bingo Hall, it was under a train. You could park your car under the L, you know, whatever. And they would go into their rent the car, and they all would just, hey, what's going on? How are you? You know, and then like they would just, Chris Benoit, they would just stop and shake your hand. Hi, how are you? Like it was just nice people, man. It was just a, and because we were the same fans, like they felt comfortable with coming over to us and saying hi, how are you? Because you know, it was that kind of party. And then you know, there was a fucking, Tommy remembers this. I brought stuff home with me. There was a fucking $1.99 store down the block, and we'd go buy cookie sheets and fucking frying pans for like $2, the cheap.
Oh, you could bring your own weapons, right?
Right. Like... and the security Atlas security would come out with big garbage pails. And you would throw,
holy shit.
Right, and you would throw your shit in there, and Raven and Tommy Dreamer and Sandman would use all the shit on each other. You know?
Wow.
In Queens, and there's Tommy remembers this. Tommy, remember the fucking VCR and the Nintendo?
Yep.
Tommy Dreamer fought Raven and beat him with a fucking Nintendo. Right? It was holy the funniest shit. And somebody brought a Nintendo. Tommy Dreamer would come outside and he would stand there and watch the people hand put stuff in the buckets and he'd cringe. Because he knew he hit Raven with a VCR and then hit him with the remote, right?
Oh, shit.
They had to stop it because guys were bringing fucking like blenders and fucking all this other
George
crazy
Foreman grill.
Yeah, all this crazy shit. Like they had to stop it, you know. But it was fun, man. I mentioned the Blizzard a little while ago with the whole Hatebreed thing. That same year they had the. It's I have it on DVD. I'll probably try to upload it. It was called the Holiday Hell or something like that. Tommy was with me. My stepdad was with me at this point, and we were at the waiting outside. It was really cold, and it was like late February, early March. It was still snowing out, and a fucking one of those old Volkswagen vans pull up with the curtains, like the 70s looking ones, right? And Sandman comes out in the passenger side, right? And he's got a shopping bag in his fucking Zubaz pants and a do-rag. And somebody mentioned, like, hey, what are you fucking... So, like, and his wife, Lori, was driving the van. So she comes out, and some guy yells out, hey, Sandman, what are you, a fucking pussy? Your wife had to drive? So Sandman looked over. Sandman turned around and goes, no, asshole, I was drinking. He pulled out two fucking sixes of Budweiser.
Oh, shit.
You know? So, you know, Tommy will tell you the fucking, the New Jack story, man.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah, Tommy, tell him the New Jack story. That was pretty fucking funny.
He had, New Jack was just coming into the venue, and he had saw Phil, but Phil was had his back towards him. So he has his, you know, I have his back to me. And if I remember this correctly, he shoves me over to the side, and not knowing who shoved me, I go, what the fuck you, oh, fuck me. And Phil goes, what? Oh, shit. What's up, big dog?
Yeah. But, like, they all knew, like, they knew you. And if they knew you, they respected the fact that you went to these fucking crazy shows and you paid them money. And, you know, they, you know, as fucked up as New Jack is, he remembered.
So, Phil, you're telling me that you had dap with New Jack.
Well...
Listen, it was just because he knew, like you know.
No, I'm saying, like, you know, you talk to him and stuff.
Yeah, all the time when
that
I was at the shows.
Crazy.
And the best part of it was the tickets that I got for me and Tommy, they used to come, the ECW used to come in at the local car dealerships over here, and they would sell the fucking, come to Lee's Toyota of fucking Queens.
It was actually, believe it or not, no, and I know Brian's going to laugh, but it was the Blasey Ford.
The Blasey Ford, right. It was, yeah. So the Blasey Ford would sell the fucking, with the tickets. And you could meet Tommy Dreamer in Beulah today at 2 o'clock. So you would go and fucking get your tickets there. You pay for the mess. You'd have to wait online. So again, these were general admission tickets. So if you had your ticket, you got a good seat, okay? Before they started doing the seating arrangement a couple of years later. So now I go to this one, this is the best. So apparently I sat like three rows from ringside one night, and the Dudleys were inciting a riot. There was a guy that was about 400 pounds, and he mooned fucking Bubba Dudley.
Oh!
Right?
And meanwhile, I was going to ask you this. Were you ever in a riot atmosphere? So go on.
Yeah. So now... Bubba's like, I'll come out there, I'll fuck you up, and I'm gonna beat up your mom, and like he was like, they were raw, like ECW couldn't film all their shit, they couldn't tone it down either. So now this guy's behind me mooning them, right, and the fans are going at it with him, and Devon's like, you fat motherfucker, I hate New York, and da 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 da. So now, a month later, I go to buy tickets for the next gig, which is for me and Tommy. So. I'm online. Tommy and Beulah are sitting at one table, and Bubba's at the next table with a bucket, fucking box of cannolis, right, from a local bakery that I wish was still around, because they made the best fucking cannolis. It was Baldi's in Queens, but they closed down. And I'm online. Tommy's like, hey, what's going on, big man? How you been? I'm like, good, man. So Beulah's like, hey, how's it going? So, like, you know, I bought two tickets or whatever it was. And Bubba looks over at the line. He goes, it's you. You're the motherfucker. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he gets up. He walks towards me. I'm like, what the fuck is your problem? He goes, you're the fucking guy that mooned me. I'm like, what are you talking about? I never fucking – I wouldn't put my pants down for fucking you. I said to him, you?
And I'm on the phone.
Right? So this guy is a fucking retard. Like, he's, like belligerent. Like, Bubba was, like, irate. Like, he's telling Tommy, like, dude, he goes, this is the fucking kid that fucking mooned me at the last show. Remember I was telling you? I'm like, first of all, that guy was behind me, and he had about 100 pounds on me. I said, so you better fucking relax. And Tommy's like, holy shit, Tommy's like looking at me like I'm back talking Bubba. Bubba's a big dude at this point. Bubba's 370.
Oh, yeah.
Bubba's huge. Bubba had about 70, 80 pounds on me. I was like 280 at the time, and he was fucking huge, and he was like, yo. And he's like, this is the guy I'm telling you. I'm like, dude, it's not me. So sit back down. And the whole line's going crazy. Like,
oh, shit.
You know?
Jesus.
So the funny part about it all was that you built like this kind of like you felt like you were friends with them.
Common ground,
yeah. Yeah, and again, we weren't like they on a first-name basis, none of that shit. You know, once in a while you get like a – that's why – when I see Joel Gertner on Facebook and he like, you know, talks to me once in a while, it's like it's a kind of like a rub because like this is great. Like he is a guy, a local guy who fucking was in it. He was a part of something ginormous. And when you interact with him now 20 years later, it's like fucking amazing cuz it brings you back to that time, you know.
Now Don Tony, he was part of it too, wasn't he?
He's
XPW, right?
He did something. A lot of shit. He worked with a guy Frank Goodman, the Mass Maniac. Goodman was like the PWS of the 90s. Frank booked any independent wrestling that came through this region came through Frank Goodman. He was a huge promoter, a shit wrestler who couldn't wrestle, and he admits it. But he booked all the talent, all the guys that were like, you know how PWS now, we talk about PWS on a bunch of our shows. You know how they
and
grab
that son of a bitch still owes me an autograph.
Well, you know how they pull talent from like how Brodus Clay left and like 2 weeks later he's on PWS. That was Frank. Mm-hmm. When Bam Bam Bigelow left WWE, he was wrestling for Frank Goodman the next week. You know,
oh,
that's how Frank was. So Don Tony, wow. I don't know the whole story, but I know Don Tony got involved with him and was doing stuff with him, and then he did stuff with ECW, XPW, like that was, you know, when ECW left, XPW was like that. He got involved. He was like doing like ticket shit and all that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, talking about tickets and taking subs to him, and I've heard him mention shit.
Yeah, because his dad had a deli and stuff like that.
That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah, it's very true.
All that shit's true.
Yep.
No, I'm not saying it's not. I've just heard him talk about it. I don't think he's lie to it.
I mean, I know that like XPW, you know, it's not that it's a bad promotion or was a bad promotion, but I know it, you know, it doesn't live in the good graces of former ECW talent or anything like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean,
it was entertaining.
XPW for what it was, I mean,
yeah, it was good.
Granted, it had every nook and cranny from ECW, but it was a promotion that was from the West Coast.
Yeah, Vic Grimes.
You know what I mean?
Altar Boy Luke is Luke Hawks, man.
Yeah, you saw people that you never even heard of
yeah.
before. Like
yeah.
how you said PWS, I would even say XPW.
Right,
was
same
like
thing.
A PWS, a PWS
same concept.
Like XPW.
Same concept. Just a bigger scale now, you know? But
yeah.
but that, you know, back then it was just a different, it was still homegrown, fucking DIY. So like what we do with the podcasts.
Now with ECW, so what drew you in then was because of the WWE was so, or F was so kind of dead at the time. And
it was terrible.
Like, was ECW like the hard, you know, was it the hard style?
It was.
We didn't get it here. We did not get it around here.
It was, you know what it was, Brian? It was one big infomercial. When ECW, I first caught on ECW, it used to come on at 2 o'clock in the morning on the Madison Square Garden Network. Every Saturday night, it would come on at 2 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was. And it was like maybe one or two matches, and the rest was just promos and commercials for them, just plugging their shit. And it was so cutting edge. You heard Paul Heyman talking about like how Nirvana and grunge music smacked everybody in the face back then. That's what he did mm-hmm. for pro wrestling.
Well, to piggyback off of that, you know, I'm with you, Brian, when it comes to football as well, because I know you're a big Dallas fan. You know, my dad's a huge Dallas fan. If I were to compare ECW to anything, it would be like Smash Mouth football.
Yeah.
If anything.
Yep. Yep. You know what, Brian? I'll send you some shit. Like I'll legit fucking when time allows me, I'll fucking throw some footage on a DVD, and I'll send you like a month's worth of TV, and you
okay.
and you'll just get it. You know, I know you. You'll take it in, and you're gonna see like It was so fucking... It was only one or two matches. But it was so cool to see the promos. And like, and they brought guys in like Ron Simmons and Tully Blanchard. And you're like, holy shit. Shane Douglas was awesome.
The franchise.
Tully Blanchard was in ECW?
Dude, he was in title matches with Shane Douglas. Yes. Yes. And it was fucking amazing. They broke off from the NWA. And you know the story, like, you know, Eddie Gilbert was booking for them. And
because at first it was called, what was it called?
Eastern.
It's called the Heyman didn't discover.
No, it was it was NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling.
Okay.
Snooker was their first champion.
And Snooker was their first champion.
And then
like Greg Valentine was there, wasn't he?
Yeah, Road Warrior Hawk was there. On Anderson.
Oh, wow.
On Anderson was there.
Wow.
Yep. Huh. Bobby Eaton was there.
Todd is God.
Yep, Todd Gordon. Yep. But again, it was like a cult following. And I hear all the old timers talk about how that's how Florida was, that's how ECW was. You know?
And, you know, another thing, Brian, I'm sure you listen to Cornette's podcast. I listen to Cornette's podcast.
Hit and miss. I'm selective.
Yeah, there you go. Don't take his word gospel when it comes to ECW.
I don't take
because
it.
He fucking hates ECW.
One
of my big sayings, and I've told my kids this, since if we all had the same opinion, we wouldn't have shit to talk about. Don't take certain things. It'd be like right now, if we all had the same views, what the hell would we have to talk about?
Exactly.
So it's just, you can't be, I'm not going to say it, somebody on the network just, whenever he disagrees with anything, he just bashes and goes off. I mean, you got to respect every opinion that you hear, whether you like it or not.
What were you going to say, Phil?
Cornette is bitter, and I think me and Brian discussed this.
Cornette's bitter
because he wasn't involved in it, and that's the problem with these guys. And at the end of the day, they're all performers, okay?
Yeah.
So if you're a struggling actor or an actress, and you don't get that role that you were supposed to get or involved in, you miss out on something. Cornette was a fucking genius promoter who didn't get a break after he left NWA. And the whole Smoky Mountain thing, he got pissed off because a lot of the guys are working for other feds.
Like USWA.
Well, yeah, and Smoky Mountain, USWA had a great...
USWA, that some of that shit, like the invasion from WWF...
Yeah, we talked about that. You remember us talking about that on the throwbacks. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, we talked about that. And then, like...
Vince Memphis or McMemphis or whatever.
That was another great episode that Dave and I did. But it's funny because you know, these guys, like, they took the Gangsters and they took, Candido and all these other guys from up there in Smoky Mountain. And Cornette was pissed because these guys were getting more money. And they were getting more, you know, and they had TV, and Cornette at one point didn't have TV. He's just bitter.
Shane, with Cornette, how, like, when I went to see Cornette, I'm going to see him because Cornette sold me so many times on Georgia on the Stan Lane, the beautiful Bobby and Stan Lane. I don't know if I've still ever heard him talk to this day.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They
didn't
had
have
incredible
to.
Fucking runs because of Cornette.
Cornette was the best.
Mouthpiece.
He has a great mind for wrestling. It just so happens that he doesn't have enough ink to put it on paper. You know what I mean?
He cemented his place. He'll get recognized.
Cornette is a Hall of Famer.
And once he gets
a top 10, but he just really, I think his bitterness is as just he just can't accept the fact of the evolving the change. He just can't accept the change of the way the business went.
I mean, look at when he was in Ring of Honor. That whole debacle. I mean, he tried to get rid of El Generico without, you know, even asking, you know, twice. And then he tried to, what was the other thing? He sent Kevin Steen, you know, he was way bigger than I think he should have been, but... He sent Kevin Steen home because of his weight issues. You know what I mean? It's just like, let people breathe. I mean, I get how You know, there's this whole lineage of Cornette, you know, the Midnight Express, and his whole legacy is cemented. But it doesn't mean that you have to relive, you know, the past, you know, 30, 40 years, you know what I mean?
No, he wasn't. The thing was, he's an old-timer. And even in Ring of Honor, he was an old-timer. He just wanted things a certain way. And I think the business was moving way too fast for him. I don't think nobody would. Honestly, I love Kevin Steen. You know I'm a big Kevin Steen guy.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
But I don't think anybody saw Kevin Steen getting that big. Honestly. Because as great as Ring of Honor is showcasing their talent, they're still limited. Because, you can only do so much with certain
characters. And Steen's the NXT champion now, right?
He is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He is.
Okay.
I would say the reason why I watch NXT now, him and Finn Balor are the reason why I watch it, you know? It's
sure.
Because
they're great. They're great talents.
I'm surprised they gave him that NXT title that quick.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I think that's just a credit to Triple H and him cherry picking.
And
the one
thing I will agree with Cornette is what he everyone on the damn card looks the same. And when Phil said earlier, when Rusev shows up, us old school guys are like, ding, 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 ding.
Exactly.
Oh, wow, we got yeah. somebody to fucking believe in here.
Yeah.
It's actually a gimmick.
Yeah, because I think Cornette is sold on you could still be a character and be good in the ring, but a lot of guys can't. And, you know, we talked about earlier tonight, like 4 hours ago, we talked about Randy Orton and how great Randy Orton is, but he's very vanilla personality-wise. So, you know, if you're a promoter, you're going to start a promotion. I mentioned if there's more than five guys you could take with you from the WWE
yeah.
roster right now, you're lucky. 'Cause
now, Phil, okay, like I mean, I'm not trying to interrupt you.
Good,
but even though I just did, but let me ask you this: if you were to, let's say, start your own promotion, okay, and I think I've asked this all the time, but if you were to start your own promotion, what's the first thing you would do? You know, it doesn't matter talent base, doesn't matter, you know, if you have TV, if you don't, what would be the first thing that you do?
The first thing I would do is I would sit down with a bunch of my friends who know the business or who are involved in the business. I would internally let the inmates run the asylum. I would write stories for a year. If I knew, if I had a roster, I would write down everything I would do. Barring anybody gets injured or anybody fucking dies, but you know, I would tell a story. 5 minute promos, 8 minute promos, I hate you, you hate me, we're gonna fight, build it. Build it in tag team matches, build it to the point where it's gotta go into a cage, build that kind of atmosphere. Have more managers, have more valets, have them more involved, you know, have people shit talk more. Not just come out and try to placate to the crowd. Just come out, pretend the crowd's not there, tell your story, then tell your story in the ring. There's always two stories when you're a performer like that. You're telling a story, and then you're telling a story in the ring. You have to finish it. When I was a kid, guys fought each other. They got involved in tag matches against each other, you know, with other partners. It built up to a lumberjack match. Built up to a cage match or something like that, some kind of gimmick match or something where loser leaves town, loser gets his hair cut,
yeah.
You know, loser gets a fucking weasel suit, you know, that kind of thing. I would build characters. They don't build characters anymore. So if I'm going to start a promotion, I'm going to build a character. Okay, I'm going to have a John Cena. I'm going to have a Kane-type character or Undertaker-type character. I'm going to have a shoot-style wrestler character like fucking Taz or Ken Shamrock. I'm going to placate to everybody. I'm going to have the fucking flamboyant fucking Adrian Adonis. Who's that kid in NXT that takes the selfies?
Tyler Breeze.
Yeah, that's an Adonis ripoff.
Yeah.
You know, but he's great. You know, I would have, you know, see, NXT is doing that a little bit. I would do it. I would blow it in your face. I would fucking bring back everything and just and build characters
with slow burns on everything.
Right.
Yeah,
right?
You don't have to hot shoot anything.
That's the thing. You got you know, fucking 3 hours of TV, and you have 8 or 9 segments. So now you have to take 8 or 9 segments without plugging everything else and fucking plugging the network and plugging pay-per-views and plugging fucking awful campaigns that you know you're not going to be a part of, and you still have like 9 segments. Me, I take 9 segments and I make you work for it. That's it. Make them work for it. Make them work for it, and then make the fan want to sit at the edge of their seat next week. Or want to buy a pay-per-view if we didn't have the network. Or want to buy a ticket when that show comes to your town. When my show comes to your town, I want you to buy a fucking ticket.
Or a t-shirt. Or...
Yeah. You know, and I know merch is big now. And wrestlers get a cut of what the t-shirts are made. But you know what? At the end of the day, I would be more sold on the product itself. And I
definitely
would build characters.
And if you're building also and you're not looking for, say, the money, you would have a pay-per-view for a year.
Right.
You want to have these monthly
I would do 4 pay-per-views. 4.
Where you could actually have somebody get hurt and it's taking them 2 months to get ready to make that comeback, flare for the gold to finally make it to that pay-per-view match instead of getting the holy shit kicked out of them on Monday Night Raw but they're ready to go for WrestleMania.
See,
Cena
I think
and Rusev. So to speak, on the Mania. It's just,
I think
you know, like I said on a previous show, not to cut you off, but like I'll never forget the Bundy and Morocco on Saturday Night's main event.
When he fucked Hogan up.
When they fucked Hogan up, and it was like a 2-month deal where Hogan was, you know, with the ribs taped up and everything, getting ready to come back. I mean, you really thought Hogan was down
and
out.
You really thought Bundy, you really thought Bundy was a monster.
Exactly.
You really thought Bundy was a monster and that you really thought that Hogan was actually healing so he could make it to WrestleMania. I miss that. I really miss that.
Yeah.
From what I've seen this season of the show, I think that's what Lucha Underground is doing.
Yeah, they're building characters.
Lucha Underground to me is... next to NXT, we'll even say Raw, okay? You know, Raw is, you know, it is what it is. We grew up with it. We've, you know, it's been in our life throughout this, you know, forever. You know what I mean? And I think Lucha Underground exemplifies of what you can have for good storytelling, good, you know, production, good promos, good, like you said, managers and valets. Hell, even referees, some of the guys that I see on like NXT, besides like Drake Younger, I'm biased, but some of the guys that I see on NXT, like the referees have a lot to do with wrestling.
Well, they have to go through the same training. It's just, you know, every wrestler that you see in the indies right now are all pro wrestlers. So they take bumps just like the other guys do. They go through the same training those other guys have to. All those guys are pro wrestlers. So, you know, it's a group effort. You know, you got a lot of independent guys. We mentioned PWS a bunch of times tonight. Those guys and guys like Jersey All Pro and Maryland Championship Wrestling, and I'm sure whatever independent wrestling you guys have. I know Shane's got Booker T down there by Houston.
Yeah.
Right.
Looking at going to one of his shows in the summertime, so that should be pretty fun.
Right. So, I mean, there are options, but you'll see it. I mean, you'll see these guys, like, they build characters, man. Fucking PWS has a Nintendo character, fucking 2 of them. They have fucking Little Joe from Punch Out, and they have Starman. You know, they have fucking a drunken swashbuckler guy.
They have a fucking car wash guy.
Yeah, Habib. That's Eddie's fucking character.
That guy is fucking awesome.
He's great. That's Eddie's creation, man. Fala Ba is a fucking Yokozuna ripoff, but he's awesome. Fala's great. You know, so they're building characters. They're building characters. That's what pro wrestling is. That's why Pat and Eric are fucking successful right now, because they have 1,000 to 1,500 people at every fucking show now. 1,000 people, standing room only. I was at three shows recently, standing room only. Okay, and you know why? Because they build characters. That's it, and they bring all the fucking old timers in for autographs too.
And they're getting their TV deals little by little.
And they got a TV deal now. They just expanded to Boston and Philadelphia.
I mean, as long as it's not honky tonk, I guess it's okay.
Yeah, fuck him.
And this is Lucha Underground y'all are talking about?
Oh, no, this, well, yeah, that and Pro Wrestling Syndicate, yeah.
Where do you get these shows at? Is that on YouTube?
Yeah.
YouTube
is definitely, yeah. We'll send you
a link. At the Shining Wizards Network.
Yeah, Pro Wrestling Syndicate.
PWF, huh?
Yep. Dude, it's solid. It's solid wrestling.
Why is Eddie? Isn't he a manager?
Eddie is the manager.
Yep. Okay. Johnny Edward Jackson.
Yep.
Fala Ba.
Yeah. Fala is like a Yokozuna ripoff. He's a big dude.
I mean, Bokera is a beast.
Oh, Mario Bokera. Yeah, that guy's a fucking...
Yeah, sorry.
Dan Moff? I grew up with Dan Moff. I grew up watching him. You know, Dan Moff, we're the same age. He fucking...
Jersey All-Pro?
Yep. Dan Moff is a fucking beast, man.
Homicide.
Yeah. That the fucking dog pound over there. Their wrestling school was down the block from my high school. I used to go to those fucking shows all the time.
That is awesome.
So I feel like Moff has come full circle, man. Guy's done it all. Now he's fucking, you know, an older guy, but now he's rejuvenated because of an indie fed that tells a good story. At the end of the day, you know, I'm sorry, I repeat myself a lot, but I just want a good story at the end of the day. I don't see why this is this is not fucking rocket science, man.
Yeah.
When back in the day when the soap operas were all big and if you're Spanish, if the novellas, same concept. They want to be entertained, they want a good story, and they want to keep your interest the next day or the next week or the next month, whatever the case may be. You know, now is a lot of times there's no incentive to be excited about the next month, the next week, the next year because it's all the same fucking nonsense.
Sad.
It is sad. And I feel like the younger crowd sometimes have nothing to hold on to. So when they get angry, I'm playing devil's advocate now, when they get angry and they're like, this sucks, and I hate this, and I hate that, and I don't like this.
CM Punk.
Right. Yeah, and they just want to chant stuff to be on TV. When I was a kid, I didn't bring signs to be on TV. I brought a sign because my favorite guy or was wrestling, or the guy I hated was going to read that sign, and I was going to piss him off. I didn't bring the sign to be on fucking TV.
I mean, let's be honest. Did the fucking crowd do a wave while a match was going on?
No.
Yes, they did.
Well, they did when the matches were.
Okay, but I mean, at the same time, what is it? Was it out of spite, or was it out of...
No, it was out of fun.
Know? Yeah.
You know, when you had... Listen, when you go to a... I'm spoiled, Shane, because I went to the Garden... When you couldn't get a seat for a regular bullshit house show, but that bullshit house show was I got a Hogan Savage feud for 4 months, and each month escalated to a cage match. That was the final fucking show was the cage.
So you were there when like Hogan would take off his robe and put on his glasses and all that. You were at those?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was at the fucking...
I remember when it was on Coliseum Video, like some videos, I would get them on there, and they were like, oh, man, this is really cool.
My mom has a great Greg Valentine story, and I could tell you the story. I could tell you the story, but my mom tells it so good that she almost incited a riot on fucking 8th Avenue. He had bumped it. He's like 6'2", and he fucking hit my mom with his shoulder getting into a cab.
Oh,
and my mom fucking like said something to him like, you know, who the fuck are you, like, you know, something like that, and called him out like, who the fuck are you, and like people were shocked that she called Greg Valentine out because he's a big fucking guy. He was shocked, but the way she tells the story is so articulate. But you know, the fans were rabid. You would wait in front of the fucking hotels and not to be on TV. There was no TV back then. There was no fucking live shows. You had your weekend shows, and that was it, man.
Yep.
You know, it was so great because, you know, the main events were at the middle of the card, because then at that point, at the end of the night, Howard Finkel would come out and he would announce the card for next month and make you want to come back.
I mean, I know I might be dating myself here. I mean, but at the same time, I would love to see a WrestleMania or even, you know,
even though it's not around anymore, a Starrcade or something like that on closed circuit.
Well, that's what happened to me with WrestleMania.
Just seeing it in a theater or wherever you're at on a screen with a bunch of people that are, you know, seeing the same thing that you're seeing.
You know what? But Shane, that's why I get excited when I have my pay-per-views at the house now, at my home, because look, Tommy came over 2 weeks ago to watch Mania. It was Tommy, fucking Rage, and Dave. That was it. And there was four of us with my son, my wife, and my son's dad, and we fucking bugged out. It was like that. That's what you and Brian talked about, how we had guys at his apartment every week. That's what it's about. I said it on the air. If the matches sucked, I can care less. I was just absorbed by the atmosphere. That's why I'm coming to Texas next year.
There you go, man.
Because
I'll see you.
Yeah, of course you will. I'm not going because I've been to two WrestleManias. I'm going because there's 100,000 people there.
There will be.
Okay.
That's a guarantee.
Okay, there's going to be 100,000 people there. Okay.
110,000.
You hope? Dude, you hope. I hope.
I think it will happen. I think it will happen.
You know, I think that it's...
And that's your team too, Brian.
Yeah, you're going to be... Yeah, you're right there with your team. You know? But... Could you just imagine? I mean, I'm glad.
And like Phil said, I'm not going because of that. It's because of the mania. I mean, I know it's my team and all, but it's
our Super Bowl, man. It's our World Series. Yeah. You know, this is our fucking thing.
I don't know if you heard what Dolph Ziggler said about the Super Bowl being the WrestleMania of football. I don't think that's true, but I do think, you know, WrestleMania is, you know, like you said, the Super Bowl of wrestling fans. I mean, it's not just Mania. I mean, it's stuff that's around Mania. It's stuff that's happening that whole entire week. You know, it's
I'm looking. I want WrestleCon. I want Access.
I'm going.
I want to walk down that ramp of Access, and I'm going to do the entrance and all that.
Yeah, I'm going to be
There's so much shit to do. I mean, you got to be real pick and choosy. I mean, I don't know if I want to attend any independent shows. I'm not into all that bullshit.
No.
I want to go to WrestleCon, I want to go to Access, and I want to go to Mania.
And who knows, you know, with Lucha Underground, like, I mean, I know I said that earlier. Who knows? They might have a show down there.
The only indie show I'll go to probably is Ring of Honor if they're down there. That's about it.
Yeah.
But WrestleCon, I probably can't afford it, but I'd love to have a table. And do the podcast from there, you know? But that might
do... anything, have walk around with a microphone. I would personally walk around. I would look nice and pretty interviewing some divas and stuff.
Yeah, I would probably give... that's what we do with the Wizards. We give somebody a wireless mic, and they walk around, and they fucking... I'll sit there, and people get interviewed, and it's good. It makes good radio, and I'll... You know,
I told Dave, I said, well, hell, if you're in Japan, if you're not going to be there, someone's got to walk around and look pretty and energetic.
Yeah.
We should show up like Bad Street, man.
Yeah.
Bad Street USA.
Yeah, we'll get some fucking shirts, but we're going to do it all.
Definitely got to represent.
We're going to paint the town, man. We're going to paint the town. That's what we'll do. But it's the atmosphere. It's the camaraderie of other fans. And now that I have the podcast, I have more of an invested interest in it. And WrestleCon is an extension of that too, because they have all the old timers there, and they sell all the old shit there, and you get to relive your youth again, man. It's a fucking fun time.
If Sheiky is there, that's the first person I'm meeting.
Yeah,
I gotta get a picture with Virgil. I gotta get a picture with Virgil, man.
Yeah, he's gonna try to upsell that fucking picture too.
And the whole thing with Mania, like I said, I plan on paying up to $100, if that, to get in the building. As long as I'm in that building and I can see that 80 fucking yard screen, I'm cool.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, because I was looking at San Francisco the week, and there was tickets going for $60, $70 the week.
They still had people on the floor. They still had floor seats.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm because when you look at them ringside seats and all that shit for $7, $8, no. Hell no. Not I don't care if I had $1 billion. I'm not that guy. I'm brutal.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
I would rather spend more at WrestleCon and other shit than I'm gonna spend on my Mania ticket for sure.
I can't wait, man. I'm gonna be podcasting away down there too, man.
We're gonna have a crew down there, man. I'm telling you that right now.
I hope so.
It's gonna be a party.
I hope so, man. I hope so. I hope I told my wife I might have to go down there earlier she'll meet me down there because she's got a couple. I think one or two of her friends are coming down there too. So it's like if Dave doesn't go to Japan, he's definitely coming down there.
Well, last couple episodes that I was talking to Double A and Tony C. Tony C was kind of on the board. So
they want to come down, and it's funny because ironically, I'm only 2 hours by plane to see those two guys. But now it's like we're all gonna be flying fucking across the country for it, you know? But we'll go down there. We'll get the hang the banner up, and we'll fucking represent, and we'll take care of business, you know.
Definitely.
It'll be one time where it's 100,000 people. We're a part of something, even if the card sucks.
I don't think it's going to suck. But if we waited longer, 3 or 4 years down the road, I think it would be – I don't think Mania is going to be the same. I think Mania is – I think the stadium shows are going to be coming to an end. I just think they're going to come to an end once all these guys retire that they keep relying on to come back.
Now – I know this is speaking way too early, and I know, you know, we're going on. We got stuff to do tomorrow, but who do you see being on this year's card? Or not this year's, but, you know, next year's card. Sorry.
I see Austin, possibly. I see Rock, Brock. If they bring that Ronda Rousey shit, if they wait all the way to Mania for that, that's going to disappoint me because I don't want to see that.
That's going to stink the crowd up.
They could do that at SummerSlam. I don't think they would waste the Rock for that bullshit. I think that's going to be a SummerSlam setup, something like that. That would disappoint me. Personally, I don't want to see Ronda Rousey in a fucking wrestling ring.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, the first thing I think of is when I see an MMA fighter, just like what Stephanie said, you're in my ring now. When I see an MMA fighter on a wrestling show, the first person I think of is either Dana White or
Ken Shamrock.
Ken
Shamrock.
Yeah.
I'm doing the whole thing, man. I'm even bringing a suit down for the Hall of Fame. That's like my wife's favorite. My wife's favorite part of Mania is the Hall of Fame. So now that she's
Hall of Fame, and I don't think that would be too expensive to get in either. I bet you're giving that for $50 or something for
me. And I'm going to go down there. I'm going to save up, man. I'm going to get some swag. I'm going to get, like, you know, I'm going to wear fucking Texas Rangers gear, get some maybe some Mavericks gear.
There you go.
Yeah, just to get the feel. I'll get some barbecue while I'm down there. Maybe you'll take me to some spots. We'll get some barbecue. We'll do it up, man. Just make it worth your while and enjoy your life because you know what? You're not guaranteed tomorrow and...
Yeah.
Wrestling isn't that good, so you know.
How far are you from there, Shane?
I live in Abilene, so it's like maybe 3 or 4 hours away.
Stevie Ray's down there from the rant. He's down
there.
Yeah. So you know, fucking, I'm sure we'll get a bunch of.
We're gonna get
there.
A crew, man. I'm telling
you, it's gonna be a fucking good time. It's gonna be a good time. It really is.
Yeah.
It really is gonna be a good time. I got enough footage for fucking 2 episodes. This is great. What's up,
Holy
Tank?
Shit. How long have we been going with
that? I've been going almost 4 hours, so.
Oh.
Jesus Christ.
What was that, Tank?
I think next year's Hall of Fame class is going to be huge.
Yeah,
you got to put Rick Rude in there.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
That's how I feel.
I hope the Freebirds get in because they're in Texas. I'm sure Taker will get in.
You're going to get Taker, Sting, the Freebirds. Rude, and a couple of other guys.
Probably fucking Duke the Dumpster Drosy or something like that.
I would like to see, and I don't know if it could ever happen. It will happen eventually. But Owen Hart, I think Owen Hart needs to be.
You got to understand, Shane. When you look at that after interview with Triple H on the network, when we get turned down by people, I think Rick Rude's wife's turned them down. I think Owen's never going in.
His
kids are never
going to
let
Savage
it happen.
Too.
No. This is a completely different.
Warrior,
Savage is my brother, Lanny. They don't think Savage got killed by the business. Rude's family thinks he got killed by the business. There's just, you know, Bam Bam. His, I don't know who's in charge of his legacy family-wise. But Owen Hart will never, ever see that Hall of Fame. And fans got to realize that. It's nothing about the invite. It's about his wife accepting the, you know, accepting the invitation and going there and accepting the award. Like a, she's never going to be there like Dana, smiling, kissing ass, and kissing baby. That isn't happening.
Well, so, another guy I see too is Brody.
See, I don't know about that because
I mean, you can't put Bruiser Brody in there.
You can put anybody you want in there.
But this is a publicly traded company. Also, on that type of level, that would be like putting a Ben Wall in there. There's just some like some shit that they got to stay away from. I mean,
I don't know. That's
it's.
I mean, Brody. I know that everyone did it. Brody was an asshole. Brody was.
But Abdullah's in there. Abdullah's in there.
Brody screwed over many promoters. Brody was a fucking asshole. I know a lot about Brody. He was an asshole. He was a fucking asshole to deal with. Promoters hated him. He was a conniving fuck. He just. You know,
you guys heard like Brody, you guys man. Heard the Brody episode. Wrong. You guys heard the Brody episode we did with Emerson Murray. So,
yeah,
you know, so
I didn't hear that episode.
Yeah, we did. We did the Brody book. We had the guy from the Brody book on. So,
oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, you heard the stories there too. I think it's. I don't know. Tommy and I have been talking about this for fucking over a decade. He's a big Hall of Fame. Yeah, he's a big Hall of Fame mark. This guy should get in now. And
Tank. Yeah, let me ask you. You know, who do you think should be in there then for next year?
Well, like I just said, Kaker and Sting are definitely the first two.
Okay.
Because they're gonna have their retirement match at Mania.
Yeah.
I would like to see Ray Stevens, but then I would also like to see Rick Rude. They're not going to put two dead people in at the same time.
Yeah.
The Freebirds. Maybe you do Flexi Lexi now.
I think they're staying away from him, too. Because of the whole Elizabeth, I think. And Elizabeth, too. I think she'll never get in.
Yeah, man, it's just it's
so sad.
If it was a year for Elizabeth to go in, it would have been this year.
You're right, dude. It's all politics at this point, you know.
But then why isn't Ivan Koloff in? Ivan Koloff's the only former fucking champion, I think, that's not in there. And his legacy, goddamn, the guy held about 50, 60 belts through his career.
Yep. Now, I know people have been, you know, speculating about the British Bulldogs being in the Hall of Fame as well. Do you ever see a WrestleMania being in a UK setting or overseas?
If they don't do away with the whole stadium thing, you gotta do one at fucking Wembley again, because it was
Davey's wife's with Owen's wife on that. She's friends with her. That whole family's fucking whacked.
You're right, dude. You're right. You're absolutely right.
But Owen, Davey's wife, at least let Davey go in.
You know what, dude? I think it's politics. It's all politics.
It is politics.
Such bullshit. Oh.
And you also got to look at, they're taking in 9 guys a year. We can't have everybody's got it. There's got to be some patience. I mean, they got to have 9 guys next year. They got to have 9 guys. I mean, you're talking over the next 5 years, 50 more, you know, 42 more guys are going into the Hall of Fame.
I don't think they should have 9 people. That's way too much.
But they do. But they do. So, what do they want to have? 1 year, just put 100 people in, and then the following year, who are they going to put in?
You know,
it's like Minnesota, Ivan Koloff, perfect for him to go in there. They got to look at the demographics of where these manias are being held. Like San Francisco, Savage going in there, that made no fucking sense to me.
Yeah, fucking Ray Stevens ran San Francisco.
Yeah, he should have been in there then. That's the perfect spot for him to go in.
You know, so.
You had to get Kevin Nash in.
But, you know, Texas next year, I mean, that's Freebirds. Texas next year, that's Undertaker.
Bruiser.
And you talk about Bruiser Brody, he's from Texas. So, like, you know, that would make perfect sense.
Is Stan Hansen in?
No.
No.
No, he had no WWF. at all, but still a guy that.
Oh, he had WWF. He broke Bruno's neck.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Well, like you were saying about Texas.
You're absolutely right. I'm fucking delirious at this point.
He starred in Vince's movie.
You're right.
Zeus.
Zeus.
He was the bartender or whatever.
Who's some other, like, Texas guys that you could put in next year's?
Oh, fucking DiBiase you could put in there.
Dr. Dusty Williams would be all right. He's Oklahoma. Who?
Yeah.
DiBiase?
Yeah.
You know who's not going in, though? I can tell you that.
Zeus isn't going in. Dick Murdoch? Is Dick Murdoch in?
Nope.
Nope.
No, I don't know
Texas guy.
In either.
Tito Santana, did he get in?
Yeah, Tito
Santana
went in 95.
When did he go in,
Tank? 1995, he went in.
Okay. Well, he's on that West Texas team.
Some other guys. There's a bunch. I don't know, maybe
Blanchard.
JBL at this
Blanchard's
point.
Already in.
Jesus.
He went in as a horseman, right?
So did Barry Windham, both from Texas, yep.
Oh, yep.
Blackjack Mulligan went in.
Like I said, JBL at this point.
Yeah, you can give him that, too. You know,
JBL, he's deserving. Shawn Michaels is in, right?
Yep.
Oh yeah.
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 Okay.
But you could do a fucking. I mean, Texas. This has the makings of being.
Terry Funk is Funk in?
Oh, I don't.
Yes. With his brother Dory.
Yeah, because didn't Mick Foley induct him or something?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Am I thinking someone?
Yeah,
else?
You're correct.
He went in with Dory. Dory's in.
Put the fuck in.
Yeah, they went into the Funks.
Devon Erichs are in, right?
Okay.
Devon Erichs,
yeah. Right. So, I mean, there's a
bummy.
I mean,
wow, that would have been huge if they could have saved. Well, they probably went in, what, Houston or something? Because they've already had two Hall of Fames in Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had one in, they had Houston. That they had a Hall of Fame class then.
This isn't
their first rodeo. This is their third WrestleMania.
They did
the Astrodome, and they did the new Texan Stadium, correct? Not to cut you off, but
this is
their third Mania since 2000.
I mean,
in Texas.
For me, I want something physical, you know, because I've been to NBA, I've been to NHL, I'm going to Cooperstown in October.
Oh, Phil, I'm telling you this right now, greatest trip I've ever had.
You know, I mean, Toronto to me is still my favorite. I'll make it out to Canton eventually. But like
Canton's a spot. I've been to all three of them, and Canton is the most coolest one. The other ones are more like walking through fucking libraries.
Well,
I
had a great time with basketball, but I mean, for me, I definitely want to basketball was great. Hockey was amazing. I loved the Toronto, but for me, I won't take the Hall of Fame that seriously until they build something physical.
But then where do you put it?
You put it in fucking you put it in Florida.
Well, I've had this conversation with people. I would rather go to the fucking California Alley Club induction.
Yeah.
Than the WWE. Don't get me wrong, I'll go, but the California Alley Club to me is the real Hall of Fame of wrestling.
Yeah.
And there's one in New York also. Have you ever been to the whatever that thing is in New York they have?
The Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, that's upstate. And I've never been to that one.
Okay.
But I heard, again, it's just, I don't know. It is what it is, but.
Where would they put it at, though?
I would put it in fucking Stamford, Connecticut. I'd put it right by fucking Titan Towers. You know, it doesn't have to be that big. You know?
Yeah.
Put it at the bottom of Titan Towers.
Put it in Titan Towers. Yeah. You already got a fucking Andre statue in there. You're halfway there, you know?
Yeah, put it in Titan Towers with the, with a little theme or like a little deli or restaurant or something in there. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. They can't.
I don't know how big Titan Towers is. Now, if Titan Towers, does he own that whole, is that whole building just for that? Or
I don't know.
Going out to other parts?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? How, like, does he have the top floor? Is the whole fucking thing WWF related? Because that's
a great question.
Pretty damn big building.
Yeah.
It's a great question. I have no idea.
I think that building's his.
Yeah. Did you ever go to that, Phil?
No, I drive past
the
all the
WWF
time.
New York?
Oh, New York? Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. The food.
I would have loved to like.
The food just, sucked, but you know.
Well, yeah, that's what I heard. It got like way too expensive. Or something.
Yeah, it was fucking like $12 for a hamburger, and it sucked.
Well, it's like eating a Red Lobster in fucking Times Square. It's like, are you? I'm paying fucking $70 for the same fucking Red Lobster meal that I can get, you know, in Columbus.
Dude.
I mean, it's just you're paying for what you get.
Yeah, dude.
Now, I would have loved to have attended one of them pay per view parties that they had.
Now those
when they would be live at Sunday Night Heat, and it would be a thing, and it was that was cool.
Yeah, I think it's where the Wild Wings place is now. They bank on that shit. I went to a fucking me and my buddy Chris Espo went to one of these wrestling groups that go to all these matches and shit. They we found them online. They actually had a pay per view party. Had a the year Sheamus won the Rumble. They had a rumble party at this this upscale sports bar in Manhattan. And me and Chris went. We walked in there. I was like, "Holy shit! This is like it was an old school vibe." They were giving away fucking T-shirts and trivia, and the place was fucking mobbed. And I was like, "This is awesome," you know. But yeah, I mean, that's where the hardcore fans do it, man.
Yeah. So speaking of that, I think ESPN has their own bar and grill thing too.
They do. It's not too bad. That's not too bad. I've been there. It's same Times Square. Not too far from where the WWF New York used to be. But, again, I ain't paying fucking $12 for a hamburger unless it's Pat LaFrieda meat, you know?
No.
Right.
Speaking of Sheamus, when are they going to change his name to the Irish Rooster?
Who cares? Leave his haircut alone. The guy's a fucking decent worker, you know?
I
like
it.
Him. I like that
haircut.
I really like it.
Yeah, it's
it reminds me of Game of Thrones, and I fucking love Game of Thrones.
Oh, I can't wait for tonight, man. It's gonna be my wife and I are fucking salivating at this point. So, but yeah, I think I'm gonna call it a night, fellas.
Alrighty.
I got some,
it's 2:00 in the morning.
Yeah, I got Well, I appreciate you guys hanging out. I really do.
Yeah,
I got
fun.
I got half of this is going up on Wednesday. And the other half will go up next month because I'll be at a concert next month. So,
well, what show?
I'm going to see H2O for 3 nights. They're doing 20.
Man! Speaking of that, I checked that new Agnostic Front.
How great is that new Agnostic Front record?
So good.
I know
the boys are back.
Oh, those fucking cats can rock, man! That one song, "Old New York," that's like my favorite.
Yeah.
That's my favorite fucking track on that record, man. That's dope. But, yeah, man, I appreciate everybody coming on tonight. And hopefully we do this again soon, you know?
Definitely.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, man. I'll talk to you.
Thank you.
I'll put this up in a couple of days, and I'll talk to you all later on, probably.
All right. Yeah.
All right, Shane. All right. Tank and Phil. Talk to y'all later.
Thanks for having me.
I just want to say one thing, though.
Yes, sir.
IWO for life.
You better buy a T-shirt, man. That's all I'm saying.
Damn right.
We're working on it as we speak, actually. So, motherfucker, everybody shirts. Good night, boys.
Good night.
Good night.
Peace.
All right, that was very cool. I want to thank everybody for checking in. Everybody who called in and hung out with us tonight. It was pretty cool. And hopefully we'll do this again next time. Take care, guys. Good night. Be sure to check out TermicalThrowbacks.com. Twitter at TBuckleTBacks. Email TermicalThrowbacks1@gmail.com. You can buy a t-shirt, ProWrestlingTees.com/TermicalThrowbacks. And we're on RantEMRadio.com, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, GeekLifeRadio.com, Stitcher, iTunes, all that happy horse shit. Audio Boom. Check us all out. Until then, thanks for hanging out. See you soon.